City Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Right, about 3-4 weeks ago, I had a lovely lady called Raganhild Lund Asnes who came in and talked about her brand new book, Liverpool Captains. Well, we barely touched on it, so I invited her back to do a little bit more. Morning
so
to you,
nice.
Raganhild.
Good morning. Thank you,
okay?
You for inviting me back.
We've got some audio from a couple of the captains that you interviewed. So with each of the stories you've done, you've obviously interviewed these players and recorded them so you can go back to it. Look over it, you know, find out which bits stand out the most. Let's start with Paul Linson. Just preempt it before. Do you think Paul in any way has been sort of tarnished by, you know, the move between the two clubs, the Manchester United, Liverpool, the connection with the both? Is he taken in by either sets of fans or clubs? Does he have the recognition that he should have or not?
I think different people will have different answers to that, but probably in the big scale, no. I think because he played for Liverpool after, his amazing standing in Manchester United is maybe a little lower, and vice versa, because he has been such a massive Manchester United player, Liverpool fans find him a bit sort of...
Well, not like a big hero, isn't it? Yeah,
but he is. Oh, yeah. And that's the trouble. You know, look at Michael Owen, the same, you know. It's just too many emotions. But then again, I think it's lovely how Paul Ince is saying in my book, he's saying, you know, thank you, Liverpool fans, for embracing me and welcoming me when nobody else would. That's what he said after he returned from Italy. And as he said, you know, Liverpool was the only team he wanted to come to. And he had so many friends from the England team here with Redknapp and Fowler. And so to him, it felt really natural to come to Liverpool when he was returning from Italy to
England.
Inter
Milan. Wait, and was it an obvious decision to make him captain or not? Did he feel it was obvious himself to be a Liverpool captain?
He's always been such a big leader character. All his life, he's been in charge, basically. Even back in the street when he was fighting, he was the leader of the pack. And for Roy Evans, he has told me that he needed a change. He had so many young players in the team. He had so much good quality in the team. But he felt he needed a strong leader who could pull that team in the right direction. So for Roy, he said that he bought Paul Ince because he needed that new change of captaincy. That big, strong leader and the experience. But unfortunately, I guess, for Paul, he came into Liverpool a little too late in his career because he was such a brilliant, brilliant player in a few years earlier.
Well, we've got the clip where Paul's talking about not just captaincy of Liverpool, but also England, which was obviously very important to him. You mentioned about if you have dreams and you pursue them, you can achieve it. So Paul is talking here about having the armband for his country as well.
The pleasing thing about... And I've never said this to anybody before, all right, is that when I was England captain, okay, I must have got to about, maybe about 600 mil from people, okay? And a lot of them weren't just the fact that, some of them were black, some of them were white, some of them were Asian. And a lot of the letters were not the fact that I was black England captain, but what I've had to my childhood and where I've got to. So from where my dad left when I was two to what I've had to survive to now being captain of your country, that was an inspiration. Some of the letters were about kids in the ghetto, the mums and dad evict to me. You know, some of them about Asian people who want to get into football and start playing football. You know, some of them about white kids whose mum and dad are divorced and, you know, they see me as an inspiration. So it wasn't just about the colour to me. It was the effect to me, more than anything, that it had on people. And maybe the fact that I was the first black in the captain made them take up notice.
That's remarkable to hear him talk in such a candid nature. I don't think I've ever heard Paul talk about himself in that. I've heard him do, you know, stuff on BT Sport where he's just analysing a game, but talking about himself there, and it's quite heartfelt, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you know, the hairs on my arm stood up for 4 hours while he talked. He shared his life story for the very first time in the Liverpool captain's book, and I feel so honoured for the trust that he gave me and told me the full story. And I do believe that his story will inspire a lot of more people now, as you hear he did back in the days when he was captaining England. It's amazing.
The Kickoff on Radio City Talk, your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.
This is the main event of the evening, 12 rounds of boxing for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world. Introducing from Birmingham, introducing
the winner from Liverpool, Tony the Warrior Dodson.
Morning, chaps.
Morning, Steve.
How are we? Okay. Right, let's get on to Hay against Pelly. So all week, these two have been at it. The fight sold out, as we knew it would do, in like minutes, didn't it? It was ludicrous. You can't get a ticket for that now.
Amazing.
So O2 Arena. Could it have been a bigger venue, do you think?
Yeah, I reckon
should they have made it
well,
bigger?
What's bigger than the O2?
Yeah,
well,
Wembley.
Oh,
80,000 people.
Don't give that to David Day.
No.
Prenton Park.
No, see, no, look.
You could have a football stadium.
You could have had a football stadium, but with there being no title on the line, I think they'd be a little bit worried. But I think with the bravado that's been going on, it's just put an extra note on the Sky box office.
I've just had the vision. Tony Bellew does him in whatever round. And then it's a big hype for a rematch, and it happens back in Goodison Park.
Ooh, two fights.
Sounds like a plan.
The odds are immensely stacked against him. We had Dale from Skybet on before. He gave the odds out, and literally, you know, if you were going to bet on Tony, according to Skybet, anyway, you're throwing your money away. But you two feel there could be a surprise.
Well worth a bet.
Look, yeah. here's my breakdown of the fight. Right, let's not forget. These two are both my friends outside the ring. I get on with the pair of them. Now, okay, David is freakishly strong and he's got immense power, and I mean immense power. He's the hardest puncher I've ever been in the ring with. He is. Now, he hasn't had a good fight for 5 years. He hasn't been pushed to any level in the last 5 years. He's done nothing for 5 years, and that in terms of as a boxer affects how you perform. You're never going to beat your best.
Yeah.
Bellew is top draw.
Yeah.
He's been a top level in top fights
recently
against pound for pound best fighters in the world. Look at Adonis Stevenson. You know, he wasn't outclassed. He was in the fight. Do you know what I mean? He's been a top level. He's been getting the rounds. He's been knocking world title contenders
getting
out.
Getting the rounds is the one being active. Makabu,
honest to God, make no bones about it. That guy before that fight was...
Everyone was running scared of him, weren't they?
Running scared of him. He was top draw. He was a class fighter. You know, when Bellew dealt with him. So he's been getting that experience that what's needed to be at top level and perform at top level and be at your best. He's had that now.
And he's fought a heavyweight as a younger guy.
Exactly. He was 2 or 3-time ABA heavyweight champion. So the weight's not going to be an issue. Don't look too much into the weight. Now, like I said, the power is a big thing. If Bellew can take that power early, then, you know, anything can happen. I fancy Bellew to win.
Wait, what's the difference in power, Masher? But what do you think he's going to be sort of taking that's more than the current level he's at?
I'm only lightweight, and I'm only a little fella, so you're telling him maybe
but
best
with
that.
But it would be like you fighting someone one weight category above, wouldn't it?
But look,
it's not just the weight category, it's the freakish power. Let's not forget, David is a natural cruiserweight himself. He's not a full-blown heavyweight. Do you know what I mean? He come from light heavy up to heavy. And obviously on the way won the cruiserweight undisputed world title, which Bellew's the number one cruiserweight at the minute, same title. So it's not in a sense the weight issue with them because they're relatively the same size as we've seen in the press conference.
But it's
the freakish power.
Yeah, but
don't
you know
understand.
All of that to want to aside people's attributes and whatever. It's the build up of the fight and it's how one gets into each other one's head.
It does affect.
I thought that you know. Hay was getting under Bellew's head, but I think Bellew's worked it right, being clever, getting the fight, and now it's turning. It's the slide's turning now. I think Tony's getting under David Hay's skin.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Right, you're listening to Radio City Talk. If you're at a loose end this weekend, what better to put a smile on your face and go and see Neil Fitzmaurice at the Laughter House and Slaughterhouse and all his mates as well. Some brilliant comedy on as always. That's the catch up with Fitzy. Morning to you, Fitzy.
Good morning, young man. How are you?
Yes, very good indeed. Busy at the moment, are you? Heading up to Christmas?
Always busy, mate. I'm as busy as you can be without putting tights on and walking around the stage. Shouting yeah. behind you. I don't do panto. But I'm just as busy. Always keep myself busy, mate.
Let's talk about your beloved Reds at the moment. Great to see the youngsters coming through there, isn't it? And sort of Jurgen orchestrating them and the crowd as well at the moment.
Well, the crowd needed. I was there last night. I was there for the Leeds game. And
they were rubbish, weren't they, the home crowd, without being awful? I mean, the Leeds fans were brilliant.
Leeds fans, and I was right by the Leeds end, so we just had that consistently. But, yeah, It was a really, really, really poor atmosphere from Liverpool fans' point of view. And I want to get it going. You want to get singing, but you can't. You and two of your mates start singing and expect the crowd to join in. So I don't know what the vibe is. I don't understand it. But it is a bit embarrassing when you're sitting next to an away end. And away ends are always vocal. We know that. And Liverpool fans, no doubt, away are incredibly vocal. But it was just a really. Really, really bad atmosphere. Not, you know, just a really dull atmosphere. And I honestly don't believe that helps the players one jot. I think it's to get a little bit going and get a little bit, you know, behind them is what they need at times. It was a very cold and very dull night and good on the youngsters. And I include Origi in that because he's still a young kid. And of course, Woodburn is brilliant. It's brilliant to see that we've got that kind of thing going because lately, over the last couple of weeks, I feel like the bench has been looking a little bit thin.
And then all of a sudden, they get a go, don't they? You know, they're out there. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Ovie Ejaria, Ben Woodburn, and it shows that they can do it on the big occasion as well.
And there were some really nice touches from all the players you just mentioned. Did some really good stuff last night, and it was, you know, when you go and see a team like that, and then you realise watching the game, and you realise that they're not first team players, and yet they've sat in and they've done a job. They haven't looked out of place. They didn't really. There was a couple of times maybe when the ball was given away, but I would have credited Leeds for that because Leeds really harried them. They really went at them, and I think probably with a little bit of better finishing in the final third, they may have come away with something because they were knocking on the door. But I just think. Couple of little nice touches and showed the difference in class, I think.
I was with quite a few Leeds fans inside the main stand last night and they were talking about the atmosphere. And I thought they showed loads of class in the amount of different songs they sang.
Oh, but incredible.
Quite a few of these Leeds fans were saying, what happened to the Scouse humour?
Yeah.
Because the Kop and, you know, Anfield was always famed for having something quick and cheeky to say back. And, like, the Leeds fans were baiting them. But nothing ever comes back in the humour department anymore in Anfield.
Nothing ever comes back. It's very, very strange, Steve. And I think they did a really funny one last night. It was after, I think it was when we'd hit the post and we all thought we'd scored. And then they come out with this brilliant song where they were singing, let's pretend we've just scored a goal. And then did a countdown from 10, 9, 8, and then all just jumped to the air like they scored it. And it was really, really funny. And, yeah, I don't know. I've long since bemoaned the fact that the atmosphere in Anfield is very, very poor. Match days on a Saturday isn't too bad at times, but it's never the constant thing that you... I don't know whether it's rose-tinted glasses, but I can remember the old days of standing in the Kop and the swaying and the pulsating football, and it all seemed to feed off each other. And last night, it does get a bit embarrassing because we're famed for it, and I just think that we haven't. There hasn't been an incredible atmosphere at Anfield for a long, long time for me. You know, maybe a European night, but...
No, and it's 50-odd thousand, and it's the same song over and over again that they say. I must sound like a right moaner, but I think Leeds just showed a great example of how you can create a little bit of a party with some good humour involved in it as well.
They were brilliant. They were brilliant in their numbers, and they were brilliant in their vocal support. And the team, the fact of the matter is, look, the team walks off that pitch, get beat 2-0, they can't blame the fans. And that's a major point. You know, they were just outclassed at the end with a couple of really good touches and a couple of really slick moves that I think undid them. But it did. I sat there last night and I thought it was freezing cold. And if ever there's a night when you want to get yourself warmed up with a few songs and stuff, it's then. And I don't know what it is, mate. I don't know whether people bemoan the fact that. A lot of the ground is taken up by people who don't have the history and they don't have the accent and the dialect. I don't know what it is. But I did notice that very much last night.
There was a great example last week when Sunderland played, I think, what was it, Arsenal? And the Arsenal fans were singing,
you're not very good, or something of that equivalent. You're not very good. And the Sunderland fans were chanting back, we know we're not very good. We know we're not very good. I think, again, there are some good examples.
There was one last night where they sang, we're not famous anymore. Not you're not to Liverpool, but they're actually singing, we're not famous anymore. So I think they had a lot of fun, quite clearly, and I think it showed. And I think that it would be lovely to be part of a Liverpool version of that.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.